evening.
Good morning, Madam Chair.
Today we're going to, I hope we're going to have a short meeting,
yes,
because it's an in-house information, and I don't think we'd be having a lot of questions because we should be contributing rather than questions, but it will assist us at least that a lot of stuff that involves tourism has been picked up, you know, from the State of the Nation address. And I think in that way it would enrich our knowledge, and I hope each one of us will have contributions into this presentation. And I hope the presentation is not going to be very long. And before I hand over to the content advisor, Jerry, are there any apologies?
Yes, thank you, Chair. We've got two chairpersons. Honorable Masahele, Chair, will not be able to attend the meeting, and then Honorable Prego is running late. She will join us late.
All right.
Honorable Prego, thanks. Bye, Chair.
In fact, I won't make any announcements because I think we all have got a pager of what we are to do. Invitations from the department.
Mm-hmm.
I think Jerry distributed to all of us. And Honorable Force, your question has been answered because I saw you wanted to know if the Committee on Tourism will be invited to the Robben Island activity. And it is invited.
One on social media.
It was one on social media, not on celebration of a tour guide.
But maybe the one later this month?
Later, like when this month? Because this one is in March. Yeah. I make the last announcement I make after who has presented.
Okay.
Which affects the program. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning, honorable members.
Sorry, Fu, before you continue, if the researcher has got anything to say, please can you add on? Thank you.
Chairperson and members, we are looking at the oversight implications of the State of the Nation address that was delivered by the President on the 9th of February. So we picked up a number of issues that we feel have a direct and indirect impact on the oversight work of the committee. We'll be looking at the socio-economic case for tourism that also include SMMEs, the issue of Ocean's economy that is linked to the PACISA program, the economic linkages for FCA. Then we are looking at what the President said with regard to investment and what are the implications for tourism, and also the possible interventions that could be used to harness benefits from the investment plan that was announced, and also the issue of minimum wage and the current drought that is ravaging the country, particularly the southern parts of the country. Then the tourist arrivals and the new direction of government on radical social economic transformation and the implications of land reform on tourism. If we look at the tourism sector as a whole, it is a sector that is a cross-sectoral. So we are not only looking at what was said with regard to tourism, but we're also looking at what was said on other aspects of the economy and how we can leverage on them as the tourism sector. Being the issue of other sectors affecting the tourism, either positively or negatively, we have other sectors that will anchor the tourism sector. They will facilitate what we do as a sector, and also enable us, if you look at the road, the infrastructure, that will be Department of Transport, if you look at migration and facilitation of people to the Secretary of Home Affairs. So we're looking at all those aspects. But also, as much as they facilitate and are enablers for the for the sector, sometimes if there are policy decisions that are taken in those sectors, they will then affect the industry negatively if, as we have seen before, there is no proper and direct consultation within government. Then we look, therefore, at the vulnerability of the sector as a whole. With all these things being said, the sector, therefore, is vulnerable to what is happening in the economy, what is happening socially. There will be the issues of crime and so on. Also, the political implications of the sector. So that is not only in terms of what is happening in South Africa. It will be even things that are happening in the generating countries where we receive our tourists. If there are policy decisions that we take as a country that have been influenced on what happens when the tourists are generated, we will suffer. If you look at what happens with the visa regime, for example, if what we do in the country affects people in the generating communities, that will have a negative effect in terms of the number of tourists that we receive. Also, as a host country, there is a number of things that we need to ensure that we put in place to ensure that we do not affect the country. So the SONA as a whole, therefore, has those direct and indirect impacts on the sector. If we look at the social economic case, the President reiterated the issue of the National Development Plan and also looking at the issue of the triple challenge of poverty, inequality and employment. So we are looking at how are we faring as a sector in terms of fighting those issues. We rely mainly on statistics because tourism is an industry that relies mainly on the statistics, and in that regard we are assisted by State SA in terms of the numbers that that they issue out either monthly, quarterly or annually. So in terms of what we call the tourism satellite account, which is issued annually by the State SA, and it's always a year later in terms of the figures. So currently we are using the 2015 figures in the tourism satellite account that was issued in December 2016. So the figures for 2016 in terms of the satellite account will be issued towards the end of this year. So in terms of the contribution to the GDP, we increased from 83.9 in 2011 to 118 billion in 2015, which is a good increase that will be also influenced by the issue of spending, even though we had that slump with regard to the arrivals, but there was an increase in spending. That is why we had healthy contribution towards the GDP. When you look at the employment, the settled account tells us that we generated about 32,000 new jobs in 2015, and that means for every 22 people employed in the country, one job comes from the tourism sector, which is 4.5% in terms of the total workforce in the country. But also at a social level, the department is also implementing, as you know, because the department reports from time to time with regard to social responsibility implementation program. So we also have those public works jobs that are created. But the numbers that are captured in the TSA do not take into account your EPWP jobs. Those are just your permanent jobs in the sector. But we're saying in addition to the numbers in the TSA, members will recall we have those numbers also that are not captured that come from the Social Responsibility Implementation Program. Also, the President alluded to other sectors that contribute to the economy and the SMMEs and how what we need to do in order to benefit from them. But if you look at the number of the economic sectors that were mentioned, it has been doing very well because currently we are surpassing the sectors such as agriculture and mining, which have always been anchors in terms of employment, meaning the sector is a significant contributor to employment and the GDP. Therefore, the work of this committee is serious when it comes to ensuring that we increase the contribution of the sector to the economy. But the importance of the sector is not only a South African thing. If you look at a nation at an international level, also the United Nations, through the United Nations World Tourism Organization, is also emphasizing the sector. So at a UN level, you have the Sustainable Development Goals. So we picked this one up because these are the issues that, as much as members are doing work that contributes to address the sustainable development, but it's something that we have not always emphasized as a committee, which I think moving forward, even as guiding principles, we need to start from there before we come to the NDP to say what is happening globally, so that whatever we do, we also focus, so that we remain competitive in the global village. So I picked goal number 8, as much as we have 3 sustainable development goals that have a direct impact on tourism, but the one that talks directly to our sector will be goal number 8, that talks to promotion of inclusive and sustainable economic growth, employment, and decent work for all. So you can see that ties well nicely with what the president said. So it's not just a South African thing, it's also at an international level. But if you look at 8.9 of that goal, because these goals are unpacked, so you have sub-goals in each. So 8.9 of SDG 8 says by 2030, the nations of the world must have devised and implemented policies to promote sustainable tourism that create jobs and promote local culture and products. So from there, members can see that as a country, at least we are far ahead when it comes to that, because we have already started. We have the national development plan that speaks to tourism. We have tourism spread all over the NDP. You have the medium-term strategic framework that talks to the creation of jobs and sustainability of our economy. The national tourism sector strategy that captures very well what we need to do as a country. Then we have provincial tourism plans and local government tourism plans. I think the oversight role of the committee should be the continuous strive towards alignment of all these strategies so that we achieve that goal, because the current status is that we have a disjuncture when it comes to provincial and local government tourism plans. Some of the provinces, as members have seen when we've gone oversight, we have provinces that have not even developed their own tourism master plans or sector strategies. At a local government level also, we have gaps that we still need to tighten up when we look at the strategic framework. Therefore, the oversight work of the committee should be towards ensuring that national vision that is set by government trickles down to government at a provincial, and so that the constitution is adhered to in terms of tourism being that cross-sectoral terms of your government level. Then there was an issue with the SME. So we said let us lift the issue of the SMEs, because currently the committee has always said we have these disjointed interventions. You have the Department of Tourism implementing their own SMME programs. You also have in government the Department of Small Business Development, but you also have provinces and municipalities developing their own SMME programs that are not joined there. So we therefore say we need more of incubators throughout the country, because if you look at all these interventions that we say they are disjointed, really they don't yield much. But if you look at the new program that the department presented to the committee that is being piloted in Mpumalanga, so I think that is the way to go. If you can have these incubators throughout the country where it's not just workshops that are conducted with SMEs, but it's like long-term intervention so that you have SMEs being streamlined with the tourism value chain. Also, there is a need for diversification of the tourism SMEs. Mainly, when you talk to the SMEs, they will be within the accommodation sector. But we need to diversify, because if you look at what is happening now, the money spinners in the sector is not necessarily accommodation, but it is activities. So you need to have more of SMEs that will be involved in some type of tourism activities, including your tour operators, because they are the ones that really, at the moment, are lacking when you look at the SME sector. And the department also presented to the committee that they were conducting a skills audit. So within the oversight implications, therefore, is that the committee must look closely to the... We hope when they present their APP for 2017-18, they will be starting to talk to the issue of the skills audit and how they are implementing it. So it will be very important for members to play crucial oversight, because if we don't, we might find that you have a very good report but is not implemented, because it should talk to what is lacking in terms of skills development in the sector. That should include SMEs to say how should SMEs be assisted. Therefore, when we talk on the increased oversight, the committee has already started, because in the program for this particular quarter, the committee has scheduled a joint committee meeting with the PC on small business development. So there's the beginning of trying to align all these interventions. And we hope that that meeting, when it sits, it will craft a way forward in terms of how do we collaborate with small business development moving forward, because at the moment it's like tourism is going it alone, and for me it shouldn't be like that. If you look at the development even within trade and industry, you have NEF that is being currently merged with the IDC, and you have projects throughout the country that have been funded by NEF. So it is not just the SME, a small player. So I look at the SMEs at that level where they will be funded also by IDC and NEF to ensure that we have SMEs graduating to large tourism enterprises. Also, this calls for a structured and focused oversight when you conduct oversight visits. So our oversight has tended more to be on the infrastructure projects. We will go and visit a lot of particularly your SRI projects, but the new emphasis maybe should be, let's do that, but let's ensure that we also engage more with SMEs, because if you look at the plight of the SMEs, the issues that they are still experiencing have been raised for a number of years back, but they have not been resolved. So if the oversight forecast of the committee also zooms specifically into the SMEs, if we go out there, we have like TARA surgeons with SMEs. We don't only look at the infrastructure project, but we have TARA engagement SMEs also with the private sector to see how can you have those collaborations and mentorships and so on between the SMEs and your big tourism enterprises. Then also you have these SME programs that are being implemented. We have had TEP that was assisting before. Now the department has decentralized, because they are no longer using one entity, but they are spreading SME support among a variety of service providers. But we know that this was the first year they did that, but maybe after 2 or 3 years of this, there needs to be an impact analysis of this SME program so that we can see really how we have assisted. Members will recall even at Indaba last year, SAT has started to have those hidden gems where they bring these SMEs, but when members engaged those SMEs, you could get a sense that they are still struggling when it comes to a number of issues. So therefore, we need the impact analysis, because, for example, you will have programs in terms of what they were saying. The department will be assisting, but there will be red tape on the programs that are earmarked for them. So to say how to ensure that if we introduce these SME programs, there isn't too much red tape, so that those that are really willing to participate are assisted effectively. Members will also recall in the SONA last year that there was a mention of the Ocean Pakisa, the Pakisa program, and the tourism sector was not necessarily a part, and that was what members read to say the department must start looking at how they leverage on Operation Pakisa, given that you also have marine tourism that has not been fully developed. The main reason being that if you look at marine tourism, it has tended to be concentrated around Durban or Cape Town. So you have a bit of it in PE, but all the coastal provinces, because we have a long coastal belt in the country. So all the provinces and cities that are along the ocean should really be participating in marine and coastal tourism. And the committee was informed that following the direction that was given by the committee with the department to see how what linkages can be made with Operation Pakisa, the department conducted a marine tourism lab last year. I think members will recall DG talked about that, to say as a department they convened a marine tourism lab where they invited all the provinces to see what programs they can implement in the coastal provinces. And also, I've also seen in the package that was distributed by UPESA that members are invited to the research seminar on the 17th of March. And in that seminar, members will recall one of the studies that was commissioned by the department was on marine tourism. So we have had these two very critical processes taking place at the departmental level, where they convened this marine tourism lab, and they've already commissioned a study on marine tourism. And we need to then see that trickling down into their APP to say what came out of those studies should then be implementable project. So that is where then the oversight role of the committee becomes important. Firstly, I'm not sure what will happen with attending that seminar, but the studies need to be shared with the committee at some stage so that members can see what came out of these research studies commissioned, particularly on this one, because it can assist all the coastal provinces that have potential for marine tourism. There's also, members, the issue of the square kilometer array, the SKA. It was raised before to say the department must start looking at what linkages could be made with the SKA. And that is said because it provides opportunities, particularly for adventure tourism in Northern Cape, for things like stargazing and so on. And we know that Northern Cape is one of the least visited the provinces in the country. So this provides those opportunities for that province. And therefore, if we visit the Northern Cape later in the year, if possible, maybe this is one of the projects that the committee can visit and the department can, because it's nice and good when they come and talk about these linkages here, but when we are down on the ground, maybe that is where members can go and visit the SKA, then see those linkages, so that if nothing much is happening, then more work can be done by the committee to ensure that the department implements those interventions. Then there were investment programs that were mentioned by the president, and in terms of particularly the Invest South Africa, which will be a one-stop shop, and it was mentioned that it will open its provincial centers in KwaZulu-Natal, Gauteng, and Western Cape. So we see that as a huge opportunity for the tourism sector as well, to say if those investment opportunities are created in those ones, so how do we then link as a tourism sector to that? Because that will then ensure that tourism continues to be a creator of job opportunities, and we can even look at how possibly we partner with such investments, maybe on our expanded public works program. Because what normally happens now, we only use the EPWP for those small-scale projects. Maybe if it is expanded to a point where maybe we have investors that will partner with government on behalf of communities to ensure that we have more projects being developed, because currently we have those small lodges. But if you want to have impact, maybe SRI should move towards a direction where you implement fewer but high-impact projects instead of implementing more small-scale projects that don't have much impact on the communities. Then what we're looking at to say, what could be the possible interventions maybe government can do in terms of leveraging on this investment plan? As we know, SAT, particularly the Conventions Bureau, will be hosting Meetings Africa this month, late this month. But there you have a lot of business tourism discussions taking place. So we need to leverage on those so that we create more business tourism opportunities in the country. So those business opportunities, for example, if you look at what has happened in Durban and Cape Town, where they have expanded their ICCs. The Cape Town one is currently towards completion now. So that means you are leveraging on business tourism. You are providing more facilities to ensure that you can host bigger and high impact business events that will contribute to tourism development. So such investments, we need to look at opportunities even for other smaller towns to say what can happen or what can be done to ensure that they also invest, because that will be government investment mainly. These ICCs are mainly developed by cities because they see value in meetings. So it's just one example, but also if you look at the hotel industry, you have some hotel groups that are currently building hotels, particularly here in Cape Town. So also in Durban, you have new hotels that are coming up. So that is to say, how do we interface with the investor to ensure that we invest more? Because as much as those will be high-end hotels, but they are good for international arrivals and spending, we should create more jobs for the communities. And what all can be done also is to ensure that, because we talked about these plans, to say provinces have these tourism plans, but if we can have investment portfolios where they can take out these big infrastructure projects. Remember, as you recall, when we were in Mpumalanga, we were informed that, for example, they are looking at like a cableway that they want to establish there. So if you then package those projects, even if government does not have money to develop those, but if you develop bankable business plans that you can sell to investors to say, this is what we want to do, it's better than projects that are just sitting on a plan just by name only, because the investors won't see what is the value for them in those. Whereas if you then create investment portfolios that investors can see, then they can start investing more. So that can not only be done at a provincial, you can even do it at a municipality level, where municipality develops a tourism plan, but takes a few high impact, can be two or three high impact projects, develop bankable business plans, and you use those to leverage investments. But also, you have these foreign missions where from time to time, you have the Minister of Finance going abroad with certain economic sectors. And we know Brand South Africa is always part of that. But the thinking is maybe if South African tourism, for example, because they are the ones who interact a lot with the trade. For example, they will be meeting a lot of people in meetings Africa now. If then there are opportunities for investment in South Africa, they can then use those platforms to further advance investments in tourism. So this is what the committee maybe can communicate to the department to say, what if South African tourism maybe were to be involved in these investment machines? Then there is an issue of minimum wage. As members are aware that it has been gazetted, but we are looking at the implications of this minimum wage and other labor issues within the tourism sector. One will be the oversight role of the committee in the implementation of this new minimum wage. So we don't normally interact a lot with the private sector, but moving forward, the committee needs to schedule more meetings with the private sector to look at a wide array of issues, including the issue of the minimum wage, the chairperson, because currently you have the sector determination within the sector that was done by Department of Labor. And normally what Department of Labor will do, it normally runs from July to June of the following year. Currently, for those tourism companies that employ less than 10 people, it's sitting around 2.3 per month. And those that are above, is 2.9 for those that are below 10. And those that are above 10 is sitting at 3,200. Now, if you look at that with the new minimum wage, it's not far off from the new minimum wage. But the challenge is the issue of people who are said to be illegally employed within the sector. And to that effect, we know that the Department of Home Affairs, for example, is engaging the tourism industry with regard to the people who are illegally employed within the tourism sector. And this is also raising some negative sentiments among South Africans, because you have issues of labor laws being flouted and people not paid even the current wage that is determined by the Department of Labor. So the oversight role of the committee needs to increase in that regard, because as much as the committee is not responsible for labor issues in terms of the permits that are issued to, but you'll have issues of critical in terms of the permits that are issued by Department of Home Affairs. You have skills that are not really critical skills, whereby people that could be employed in the sector are there, those jobs. But if you look internationally, that is where Catch 22 is. Most of people who work in the tourism sector will be foreigners in those countries. So the same trend is now increasing in South Africa, where more and more of the people employed in the tourism sector are foreign nationals. But we have to look at our peculiar situation to say what is the percentage in terms of what is allowed by Department of Home Affairs and the nature of permits and whether really you have people who are illegally employed. Because if nothing is done, maybe this can go out as a crisis later. So the committee needs to start looking at this issue, maybe working closely with Department of Home Affairs and the Department of Labor. Members, the country is currently experiencing drought, though in the northern provinces we have had rains, but we have had continuously the Department of Water Affairs saying the rains have not been enough even in those provinces. But the situation is worse when you look at provinces such as the Northern Cape and the Western Cape. And previously, though they have not weathered the storm yet, province of KZN also had a serious drought that affected the tourism industry in the north, where you did not have water even in the tourism facilities, and other nature-based tourism activities were affected in areas such as Ofufu, Impolozi Park and Isimangaliso. And here in Cape Town, I think we are all aware because we are affected by this. The city has introduced stringent and stricter water restrictions, which is level 3B restrictions as from the 1st of February this month. And that does not only affect the residential communities, also affects the tourism facilities, because also they have been issued with the warnings in terms of how much water and what they should and they should not do with water. So if you look at the issue of drought and also other parallel discussions about the weather situation in the country as a whole, drought is not a once-off phenomenon. So what we are experiencing now might pass, but we'll also have drought in the near future, meaning the oversight role of the committee should be on how we improve on responsible and sustainable tourism to ensure that the facilities in South Africa employ mechanisms that will ensure that we use minimum water in our tourism establishment. But this does not only talk to water, it talks to issues of energy and so on. And members will recall within the department we have a directorate that deals with responsible tourism. So more engagement with the department can assist in this regard to ensure that that directorate works closely with the private sector to ensure that. Because some of these facilities, you don't need to build new facilities. You can just adapt new technologies to ensure that you save water in those facilities. So I just took an example of one hotel that is said to be the most sustainable hotel, not just in South Africa, but in Africa, which is Hotel Vet, which is near Cape Town Airport. So this is what was happening in Mangaliso around White Love as a result of that, where they were even pumping water from the borehole to ensure that animals could drink. In terms of water saving innovations, I put two pictures from Hotel Vet where they have installed, for example, a 40,000 liter tank that stores rainwater, so they will be using that water for things such as irrigating their gardens, washing and cleaning and so on, so that you don't use the municipal water, but you can also use your own water. Also with flushing toilets, they use grey water. So they've developed systems where if, for example, you're taking a shower or a bath, you can then redirect that water into the flushing system where you use that water for flushing the toilet, meaning you have minimum water usage. So these are the issues that members can... We have a lot of... Already in the department, they have developed brochures in terms of what strategies can be used by hotels to save water, to save energy, and so on. But the issue is the impact thereof and what is being done to ensure that you have more buy-in from the private sector. So the oversight work there is to ensure that the committee talks to the department to ensure that there is more buy-in by the private sector on these innovations. And if you look at tourist arrivals, the issue of tourist arrivals in the past few years has been an issue, particularly since 2014 when the new regulations were introduced. But well, the government, as members know, has worked tirelessly to ensure that the situation is corrected, including interventions such as the Inter-Ministerial Committee that worked on this, and some of the improvements that have been implemented by the Department of Home Affairs in the tourist-generating countries. So we seem now to have weathered the storm, and our numbers are starting to improve. For the 11 months in 2016, the figures are not official yet. The president alluded that we have 9 million, so that is the figures that we are working with now in terms of the arrivals that we had last year, and that talks to an overall 13% increase in terms of the tourist arrivals in the country. But even though if you look at that 9 million, we are still even less than the 2013 figures, meaning we are just catching up with the status where we were. So therefore, the oversight work of the committee, because if you look at what has been happening, even with the two quarters that the committee has considered for the current financial year, South African tourism has failed to meet the set targets in terms of the tourist arrivals. We understand all the challenges they are facing when it comes to international arrivals, but something more could be done if maybe we work together to ensure that we increase arrivals. Because if you look at the numbers at which the globally we've been at about 5, the average has been 5%, 4% growth internationally, but we have been below that. And if we are still sitting at numbers that are less than 2013 numbers, it means there is a lot. If you look at the spend, the increase in spend, because in 2015, the TSA, TSA was saying, even though you had a decrease in the number of arrivals, but the trend has been a more spending. So people are spending more. So just imagine if we had more people that were arriving, it means their spend will even be more. So this is a matter that the committee really needs to work with. As much as we are emphasizing domestic tourism now, but we are still riding at the back of international arrivals in the country. So meaning the work chairperson when it comes to international tourist arrivals needs to be intensified. So also the president talked on radical social economic transformation. There is a lot that was said, and we can see government, all the departments of government are like gearing up with radical economic transformation. So that does not leave tourism out of that new approach of government, because currently tourism sector is still untransformed. The committee has alluded to that, and the department was even requested to come and present on the new tourism sector post to ensure that there is good alignment of programs that are trying to achieve transformation. So therefore, the committee should conduct more stringent oversight in the implementation of the B sector codes. And there are windfall gains that we can get even in the current B sector codes when it comes to enterprise and supplier development program, where you can have a number of innovations, as it was said when we were discussing the B sector codes, to say the private sector, for them to comply now, they need to outsource some of their non-core services to other suppliers out there, be it laundry and so on, so that you widen the tourism value chain. So in so doing, they will be empowering emerging enterprises, but at the same time complying with the scorecard. So there needs to be constant feedback to the committee in terms of how are we faring in terms of transformation to ensure that we are not left out in terms of, because that is the only legal instrument that we have as a sector, is to ensure that we implement the sector codes across the board. But there are other opportunities in terms, for example, if I go back to the issue of SRI, where we can implement much better community projects that will ensure that ownership by community is meaningful. So most of the projects the committee has visited are not operational. So if we ensure that they are operational, and if new projects are implemented, they are really meaningful too. So that will start to improve the issue of ownership and the tourism activity of your formerly marginalized communities in the tourism sector. Also, we need to enhance the support that is given to SMMEs, as we have alluded earlier. And members will recall that there are many rural tourism interventions that have been implemented by the department, and also we have other opportunities when it comes to township tourism, for example. So we have a number of success factors that can lead to these township enterprises being successful. The ones that we have currently mainly are just generated by individual entrepreneurs. But if government was to deliberately intervene on township tourism, for example, I just took a few of some of the well-known and functioning township tourism. You can see in this Maxis one, Etumlazi, ARD, so that they are very popular. And you, even if you, if members can go into some of the social platforms and see what people say, you can see they are well received. But even on TripAdvisor, if you look at the comments people are saying about ARD, for example, they are very positive comments, meaning there is potential there. But these are just people that are doing these things on their own. But if there was more intervention by government, this could work. Then you have Mzolis, which is also popular here in Cape Town. It's even frequented by tourists now. So these are models around which, even when government starts to intervene, maybe you can look around these models. But what is important is just to ensure that you have the entire experience. You don't just have Yadin, you don't just have Umzolis. What else do you provide in townships to ensure that you have more tourism experience? If you look at what is happening in Soweto, for example, you have the famous Vilakazi streets with all tourism activities that are happening there. But Soweto has diversified now. It's not just about restaurants. They're starting to have activities. You'll have like bungee jumping in the Tin Towers. You have these bicycle rides, and you have these quad bikes. So that increases the experience in a township, rather than just people going to Mzolis or Maxis to say, when we intervene as government, let's make sure that maybe we also influence people to get into other tourism activities to ensure that we have meaningful township tourism. So that will assist with radical economic transformation, because you are talking about new products. You are not saying people must share just new interventions that have huge potential to succeed. Then the issue of land reform also is a very serious issue in terms of the State of the Nation address this year. But if you look at what are the implications of land reform on tourism, so the committee will know there are many tourism products that were affected by land reform. When people were given this land, sometimes you had lodges or game farms, most of them which are no longer functioning because of the delays and maybe the approach that was followed. But you have others that have been successful. When members attended the previous local tourism conference, you will recall there was the study case of a Pinda Game Reserve in KZN, where you have land that was under claim, communities getting into partnership with the operator, communities even donating more land on their own volition to ensure that they... So you have such successful projects in the country, but you also have those that are not functioning. If you look at the ministry result, when members visited Mpumalanga, went to the Nisi community project that is run by a trust, they have a kind of a game reserve, they have some game trials even into Kruger National Park, but the way it is operated, if you were to compare the two, there is much that needs to be done to support those communities. So there is a lot, therefore, that the Department of Tourism can do, maybe in partnership with land reform, when such projects are being implemented, to ensure that communities leverage on both departments in terms of implementing successful projects. But many other opportunities exist on land reform, such as ecotourism, co-management agreements, and exploring a number of other opportunities that, for example, are brought by land that is returned to communities. So you can have like wildlife auctions, canning hunting, as much as there is a lot of noise around that.
That's probably fair.
So there's a lot of noise around that happening in the country. So trophy hunting is one of them, and of late also with the hunting and killing of lions, you also have a lot of noise in the country, venison, photography, and a number of other opportunities that are brought by this land that is returned to communities. The department, I think, is something that we need to schedule if we find time. The department has developed guidelines on community-based tourism to say if these projects are implemented, how they should look like in shape and form regarding your institutional arrangement, financing, skills development. So it's a very comprehensive document. It is in the departmental website. If members want to download it, you can download it and just read through. So, meaning you must have a new approach in terms of how we develop these community projects. I just included the wildlife value chain, if you look at ecotourism. So I took this from a study that was conducted by Department of Environmental Affairs in 2014 with regard to green economy, wildlife based land reform project. So those are the things in terms of the Department of Environmental Affairs that they are doing. As much as these things are done by the Department of Environmental Affairs, but they have direct impact in terms of tourism, in terms of game sales, hunting, eco estate development, venison, as I've alluded to, supply chain industries, safari and photography. So there is a lot that can be done with the with land reform projects when it comes to tourism, but you need those linkages and that cooperation among various government departments. So that is what we thought were the important factors that we could pick up from the State of the Nation address, and then we recommend that as we move forward in the year ahead, starting with the APP that will be developed by, that will be tabled by the department, the committee should start to look at all these issues we are talking, if they are incorporated, because if they are sitting in a number of strategies and you don't have implementation, if some of them are not in the current APPs, the committee can engage in terms of what are their future plans in terms of doing these things. So we recommend that, therefore, in the revised plan for 2017-18, the SONA is taken into account, and that also, as the committee conducts its oversight over the next financial year, all these issues we have picked up become part of the oversight program of the committee. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you, Smu. Researcher, do you have anything to add? I'm taking questions. Do you have anything to add? So the researcher doesn't have anything to add. But honorable members, do you have anything to add? Because this is all ours, and maybe query aspects that you would want more clarity or whatever queries that you may have. Honorable Kronborg?
Thank you, Chairperson. I think, as you're aware, I try in all these meetings to put the numbers and try and understand, because adjectives can be interpreted in different ways, and we can all have different opinions, and that's fine, that's human life. But we shouldn't disagree about the facts. And the facts, where they are reduced to numbers, makes our discussions more fruitful, because we can then have a starting point where we all agree on the facts, then it simply becomes interpretation and then what we recommend for the future. So I appreciate the fact that we're doing this so soon off the SONA. Obviously, it's quite difficult for our committee researcher to put together a set of numbers, because it just hasn't been time to do the research. But I think it would be useful, considering all the work that he has done, to try and do something like that. So the one I want to concentrate on is the effect of SONA on tourism as it pertains to radical transformation, radical economic transformation, and land reform. Now, he spoke more of land restitution and land reform in a general sense, which a number of valid points were made there too. So yeah, when there is land reform and committees going to partnerships, we can do something pretty spectacular in this country, as we saw in some of our oversight visits. Some of these things work really well. Simplicia Estuary, Smangalisa Wetland Park seems to me like a very good example of how government, private sector, and previously dispossessed communities can actually come together and make something that's world-class and a credit to our country. What we didn't speak about so much is land expropriation. And I think if we're honest, we can leave the political party jockeying and interchange behind, and we can all agree on one thing, that businesses will flourish when there is certainty about the policy framework. That's one of the reasons why mining is struggling at the moment, because no one's going to invest billions in a mine until they know exactly what government's intentions are and whether, in fact, the investment is going to be secure. I mean, that's how you attract international investment, by having a very clear business-friendly policy framework that's secure, and then people feel they can get their money back and return on their capital. Now, one of the unique advantages we have in this country is our scenery and our wildlife. We have the most spectacular resorts in the world, right from Karoo desert-like environment through to very wet environments in the mountains. and everything else in between, and a wildlife heritage that people are now paying very big money to come and see. We all know about the Kruger Park, but that's only one part. So I think the points that were made about ecotourism are valid. I'm upset to see canned hunting, I think you meant, not canning hunting, on a presentation as an opportunity. I think that should be eradicated from this country with a blight on our national conscience. Anyway, be that as it may, there are many people that I think who have farms or have large tracts of land that could make, perhaps in conjunction or in collaboration with local community, a really nice eco-game farm or something on the longer lines that international tourists spending a lot of money, which we need in this country, would come along, stay in nice accommodation, go on grand drives, see the Big Five, take part in the cultural heritage, much like we did when we went to see Sun City and we went to the resort right next to that, which is a very good trip we did, and bring foreign exchange and jobs and opportunity into the country. I can't see anybody with any substantial or even reasonable piece of land in the rural areas wanting to make that investment in the infrastructure at the moment, until such time as we know how a land expropriation is going to be, in fact, in a practical sense, rolled out in this country. I mean, you wouldn't do that if you feel that it could all be taken, and you might not get the money that you invested back if the land value, which has been in the pipeline now for some time, decides that the value of the land is less than what you spent. So no one's going to invest money in those circumstances. So I'm just putting a little warning flag there that, as you said, right in the beginning of the presentation, we are an industry that is very much affected by everything else. This we know. Tourism is impacted upon and impacts upon many other things. Would it be possible for a study to be done to show us excuse me, what the effect is going to be on investments in ecotourism while the uncertainty about land expropriation is out there? And even once there is some certainty, what the trade-offs will be? Because everything you do in government, policy impact, opens some doors and closes others. That's the nature of things. So if you are going to have the potential tourists who are capable of bringing lots of foreign exchange into the country, and you're going to make that a land expropriation piece of land and do something else with it, rather than tourism, then what you gain on the one project, you're going to lose on the tourism. And we should always be looking to see what is the net benefit to the country. So I would really like, Chairperson, through you, to request our researcher to possibly do some work and look at some numbers. What is the potential for ecotourism in this country? What are the jobs that can be created out of those kind of things that he's put up on the screen? How much of that is now being held back because of the policy uncertainty on land expropriation? So we can get our heads around the problem, and we can make recommendations as to how the kind of things that need to be done in our country can coexist in a manner which benefits all our people. That would be my request to you. Thank you.
That's a good input,
thank you.
Researcher.
I'll do my best.
You caught everything that was said. putting your heads together.
Yeah, there's something about the problem. It's not the putting your heads together. What Colin Mukumba was referring to is a commission research, which would really require certain resources which do not exist. So that is the crisis campaign. And sometimes we normally depend on the things that are done by university, because ours is only desktop research. We're not even allowed to go out into the world to go and do our research on our own. So that is the problem.
Can I ask you a thing on that? I take the researcher's point, you know, and she is right. She doesn't have unlimited resources in Parliament. But Parliament is not the only person that will be looking into this. There are tourism bodies. There are interest groups and stakeholders that I'm quite sure are looking at that themselves. And maybe all it requires is to get in contact with some of those groups and ask them if they can forward any research that they have to assist our committee. And then she wouldn't have to, you know, be beyond her mandate or exceed her mandate, and certainly she wouldn't have to exceed the budget. Cost of a few emails, that's it.
Actually, I'm sure it will also help if maybe we we talk about those so that people could begin to understand which groupings to take on if we all could share. It was a Honorable my Kulela.
Am I noted, sir? Am I noted?
Yes,
yeah.
I noted.
Okay.
You were not part of the sauna,
good point. You were
not part of the sauna, so even though we are not up, and they don't recognize the sauna,
so
what input would you have?
I wanted to go if I'm noted.
Chairperson.
Well, we woke up at some point as well.
Thank you very much. Mine is, I see somewhere in your input, content advisors, that you talk about the oversight role on the, our oversight role on the implementation of the minimum wage, the current assigned minimum wage. Now I'm sitting here putting my head together, trying to understand how really are we going to intensify or work on that, because I believe we have failed dismally, even currently, in ensuring that the current sectoral determination is enforced on many tourism products. You have many restaurant workers who are working for tips, who are working for less than the sectoral determination that is put out there, and we also, I would also say, the Department of Labor has also failed to ensure that compliance with the sectoral determination is enforced. And now you have something else which is even more intense, where we say we have the minimum wage. How really are we going to ensure that the minimum wage is enforced on our sector, you know? But nonetheless, it's something that we are looking into on how we should, what we should be doing moving further. And then you have also something that talks to the critical skills or permanent critical skills, how visas or work permits are issued out, by whom are they? You know, most of the people that work on the tourism products don't even need those critical skills. I mean, I believe the country has a wide range of the skills that could work in there, be it tour operators, be it chefs, be it those that are working in the far end of the value chain, like your waiters and your waiters and waitresses. But I believe we have also dismally failed on compliance in that aspect, because you know, my take is that the reason you have so many foreign nationals working in the tourism space is because we have failed to enforce our own laws and policies as the country. And people come in, they see those as jobs that can be done, quick jobs, jobs that don't require those much skills, you know, if I may say. But nonetheless, I just want to understand, perhaps it would assist on how best, what are the strategies that we're looking at in moving forward, and how we are going to ensure that our legislation, our laws and our regulations are adhered to or they are enforced. And then I go to the tourism, in fact it's the BBBE sector code. Perhaps this one is just a proposal that we get a one-day workshop, Chairperson, on this tourism, on in fact on the BBBE sector code, so that we, sitting here, I understand only half of the BBBE code. think it would assist if, let's say, we, it's a proposal, we have a workshop on, so that we can drill down to the tourism sector specifically and see how best we understand this triple BEE. Because adding to this, what I've heard on the sauna is more and more and more regulations coming in, like your 30% what you call requirements and all that. So these things are building on top of things that we are, well, let me speak for myself, I'm grappling to understand. So as you build up on top of things and things, will end up being left behind. And I'm just afraid that I'm left behind, and my apologies, colleagues, if you are far ahead, perhaps Chairperson would just have to assist me alone on how to drill down and understand these sector codes so that you conduct a meaningful oversight on something that you fully understand. And then my last input would be on slide 6 on issues of the tourism SMMEs per se. You talk about oversight on the implementation, on the skills audit outcomes, and you talk about incubators throughout the country. Perhaps in the 3 years that I've been here in this committee, I'm still struggling to get the department to come up with numbers to say this is how far we have gone. We are at this point. This is our plan. This is, you know, I was so inspired by the Minister of Health as he was outlining the National Health Insurance, to say that the National Health Insurance will be implemented in these years. For this part, we are at this phase. For this part, we are at this phase, and we are going to move into this phase, and then ultimately we envisage to get to this point. Now, here in tourism, you know, I, for one, do not understand where are we currently. You know, the department comes in here, they give a presentation, they are launching incubators throughout the country. You just hear one, we were in Komaz municipality, we did a workshop there, and it ends there. And you grapple to find something tangible to say this is what the department is doing. Besides what we go and see when we go on our oversight, which by the time we come back we are traumatized, you know, or I'm traumatized to say. They say they have spent so much on this project, it's not even moving, or there are so many challenges with the project. Perhaps they've inherited those programs or those projects from DTI, and they've moved over, or from which is the other one? It was Environmental Affairs and Tourism. Yes, you would understand that some of these programs or this project where it's an inheritance from other departments, and they were bound to go wrong. But I would not say they were bound to go wrong, because they were specifically in the tourism space. So the tourism department or the tourism component of those departments still had to take ownership and ensure that those projects, they become positive projects, and they benefit the desired, what you call, planned objective. But looking at this, I'm now trying to pin down where exactly are we going to do this oversight? Where are we going to intensify the oversight on this one? I can't get anything on my hands that the department is doing on SMMEs. Now, you are going to even bring in a another department which is still also on its teething phases, small businesses, which also still is grappling to get money from there and there and there and there. You know, well, I will await your guidance, Chairperson. Perhaps when we start the work, I'll see the light at the end of the tunnel. But right now, I'm still at the beginning of the tunnel where it's quite dark for me to move out and get to the far end where I'll be seeing the light. That's my submission.
Thank you.
Join me here and you'll see the light every day.
Honorable Khawuna, I'd like to hear your voice. Honorable Adam, I'd like to hear your voice. Thank you. Whatever.
Thank you very much. I understand the perhaps I must say that at least I was there when the president was giving the greetings, so I can speak. But I think the content advisor, Dr. Sbu, is probably having his own limitations in terms of drilling down to the speech of the president and so on, given the fact that in most areas it was just a helicopter view, which we hear repetitively.
Sorry, let me just maybe put you into the agenda. He said he picked up the tourism aspect and not the whole...
No, it's well captured.
The whole view, but he just picked...
Thank you, Chair. I mean, point. A helicopter view on those issues that lead to tourism. That's the point I wanted to make. And perhaps let me start on the issue of the ocean economy, that I see that much as the highlighted challenge is the fact that there's concentration, Cape Town and Durban, in terms of the marine economy. But I think there is also a bigger problem. I also happen to come from a coastal area, which is PE. And I think the bigger problem is the participation of the broader society to the ocean economy. In the main, the most historical disadvantaged and marginalized people. And unfortunately, those people happen to be black people and Africans in particular. The reality is that there is still too much bureaucratic process for the participation of those people in the ocean economy. There is no intervention from the state to assist those people so that their participation becomes easier. In terms of our constituents' work, we have had a number of meetings with mostly the people that are working in the sea, who will say that we're unable, we've got the skills, we want to do our own business within the fishing industry. And because of the industry is monopolized, it's monopolized by people who've got networks with their politicians, and also with the people. So the point is that there is still marginalization for people to participate in the ocean economy. Even when it comes to the issue of licensing, I can tell you now in Port Elizabeth, one of the crises that the people are having there is that you have a company, obviously owned by a white person, which has got monopolies of the sea from Port St. John's to Jeffreys Bay, and given that license by the department in terms of the fishing rights. And any other person that wants to participate is subjected to that company that has been given. And therefore, it must... So the point I'm raising is the issue of participation of our own people in the ocean economy. So despite the one that is highlighted here, that this ocean economy at this point in time, there's much concentration in Durban and in Cape Town. But if you go to the detail without looking from a helicopter perspective, you'll find that there's... In fact, I will even challenge the researcher, even if you do a desktop researcher, if you can just check the number of black people that have been declined into participating as fishermen in the industry, you will have shocking numbers. And even check those that have been accepted and do comparison. You see, you will see how substantive this point is. That's the point that I want to raise on the issue of ocean economy participation. Well, you have also lifted the issue of the minimum wage. Well, there's nothing much to say there, but I think it's good for us to know that at this point in time, the minimum wage, it does not seem that it is likely to be implemented because you still have other stakeholders in the main consortium that have not signed. You see, well, we don't know, but the substantive views that have been raised make many of us believe that there is no way that COSAT could sign, not unless another intervening arrangement is made, you see. And also, you will remember that if the minimum wage is signed up before it is implemented, it's going to affect other legislation, which amongst them is labor relations. So we don't know, because there is this hype that the minimum wage could be signed tomorrow and it will be implemented the following day. Which, of course, it has got its own dynamics because it does not talk to, it does not give expression to its overlapping with the sectoral determination, which is another theme. And my view specifically on tourism, I don't know, perhaps we must make a submission at some point that we need to categorize the jobs that relate to tourism. That will only be reserved for South Africans because I believe that to a certain extent, it's a cheat to give tourism work which is supposed to deal with the heritage of our own country. You have people either as tour guides or as anything in the industry not coming from South Africa, which are foreigners, which are participating. And we must be given a case on specific jobs that are given to foreign nationals. You see, because in my view that tourism should be a heritage of the country and therefore it should be confined to South Africans. You see, it could be a debate for another time where we can have substantive views on that. The other part that we have picked up, Cornell Advisor, is the effects of drought in the sector. Well, it's true. But perhaps we need to do a proper investigation on the excessive use of water by big companies. Because seemingly, the most people that tend to be used as a scapegoat and will suffer on the issues of water drought. I was watching a TV from the people of Emalahleni where they were drawing water from a dam, dirty water. But the point I'm raising is that big companies are using excessive water. They are using excessive energy. But you don't hear them suffering the pain when there is water restrictions. And I'm saying that there should be a thorough investigation on how these companies are using the water and they become insulated when some of these have to be blamed, and unfortunately ordinary people have to be blamed. I'm raising this knowing very well that government is subsidizing big companies with water, with electricity. But we must check that subsidization of water, you see, as whether it becomes a license for those companies to excessively waste our water. And at the end of the day, because we are so afraid of the markets, we don't even touch them when we have to punish. We punish our own people. The last point on the issue of water, Dr. Spoon, we must also investigate the capacity constraints of the water infrastructure in the world of the country. Because it's a pity now that I don't have that authority. But there's also an allegation that many of our infrastructure water reservoirs are dilapidated. They have never been maintained, or if they have been maintained, they've been poorly maintained. We must do that because it is a responsibility of the state to ensure that our infrastructure reservoirs are well maintained, and therefore any failure to maintain them, it imposes a risk, because we may be talking about leakages of depth from Kugulethu and all those things, and yet we have leakages of our own infrastructure which is supposed to be maintained. I'm just saying that because we've been talking about the effects of droughts almost in other countries. I just heard that in Cape Town within 105 days we might be having some serious challenges. On tourist arrivals, the only point that I want to make a submission of is that because I know in the past we have discussed the issues of visa regulations, and they were made to believe that they have been relaxed. But I think we must actually be given a case study, comparative analysis with countries that are most likely with us, as to how they are dealing with the issue of visa, so that we accelerate the tourist arrivals in the country. Because much as we have increased, as you have alluded, we still have not made our target. The speech of the president, I'm told, it refers indeed to radical socio-economic transformation. And there were serious observations which are interesting to our own people. And amongst them is the economic structure. The economic structure, and if all of us share those sentiments in the tourism, even if in other departments it's not done, we must make a submission of so that we give content to the helicopter view of the president. We give detail from the tourism perspective of how do we think the economic structure within the tourism sector can be radically transformed. And I think we can do that. You see, we have lifted here already that the concentration of accommodation is still belonging to the historical disadvantaged people. And what should we be doing to ensure that property in South Africa is accessible, especially to the people that want to engage into business of tourism, so that we have more black people, Africans in particular, that are able to participate in the property industry and be able to engage in tourism on accommodation. The patterns of ownership. All of us, we agree that patterns of ownership are still reflective of our apartheid past. What are we doing about it? We're talking about it. What are we doing? And the only way that you can engage to patterns of ownership is when you go straight to the last issue that Dr. Sbu has engaged on, the issue of the land reform. Until we ensure that we change the ownership of land and make sure that, in fact, not see it. It's there in the Constitution, but it's unstrung. The very same Constitution is unstrung in the issue of expropriation. So we need to engage to Section 25 and even amend the Constitution so that you scrap the willing buyer, willing seller arrangement. So I'm just saying that the President has lifted these in his radical, which are good, but just that the fear of our own people, the view was too helicopterish. We hope that the departments are going to assist to give the details. The last part, the last part, you see, I'm doing my constituency work while she takes me out. You see, the last part, on the issue of land.
You know what your constituency is?
I think, because the President has noted that part of the challenge when it comes to the issues of land redistribution and land restitution is that even the 8.9% that has been, I'm told now it's 11%, even the 11% that the President refers to that has been redistributed to our own people, the key challenge remains that our people will get their land and still sell the land, which is a problem. Eh? And therefore, I'm saying that we should then engage into a moratorium, that once you engage into expropriation, no one should be given an authority to sell the land without subjecting it to the state. Because now, remember, once you expropriate land, it becomes the property of the state. If I have to sell that land, it must be subjected to a particular process. The game reserves and the natural reserves, I'm saying that all of them, because they are the most they are the most asset where we derive revenues in the environment and tourism. And I'm saying that they should also fall under the state. The state must nationalize. Yeah, thank you very much.
Yeah, fine.
Thank you. A lot of the issues you raised, they would be better placed with a rural development and land reform.
Yeah,
the better place there. That's the right place. Honorable Fox, you have something to say?
Thank you, Chair. Much has been said already about the land reform and the ocean's economy, etc. Perhaps I would like to just focus on one or two issues which I think is missing from the President's speech, and I think this is a good exercise because members can now actually conceptualize where tourism actually fits in to the state of the nation and how it should actually be the one very important key job driver in our country. Now, if you consider the figures of 2013 up to 2016, it clearly indicates that we are about 600,000 tourists missing from the equation. So there's still the catch-up situation of the visa regulations that are really causing massive damage, because if you say there's an increase of 13%, it takes the comparison to 2015, but in fact you should actually be growing over a much longer period. So 9.6 million in 2013 compared to the 2016 year of only 9 million is a really disappointing figure, something which could have been prevented, and I think in the SONA speech something that's completely missing, because the President only referred to tourism I think once in his speech when he referred to the figures, because he referred to it conveniently to the 2015 figures. But what's really missing is the fact that we should be not having an equation of one job out of the 22 in the tourism industry. It should actually be much higher, because we should be focusing on our domestic market, because that's where we can increase our job percentages and much more impact on the economy of townships and the rural areas. Because let's face it, the big cities are already receiving their fair share because of the tourism infrastructure, i.e. conference facilities, hotels, airports, public transport, etc. So I think if you consider the South African landscape, what is missing from SONA is clearly what we should be doing in our rural settings. In the other provinces where tourism could become a major player, if we just have the political will. But here's the thing, there's a complete disconnection between what the National Department of Tourism is doing versus what our provinces and our municipalities are doing. We need to fix that relationship. I agree we should have a joint session with the Department of Small Business to see how we can grow small and medium enterprise, which is admirable, but we will not be able to achieve it if we don't actually start by addressing the disconnection between what we are doing from a national perspective and what our provinces and our municipalities are doing. Yes, the Tourism Toolkit Conference with local government is an important tick box for the year calendar, but there's not really, I was actually quite disappointed last year because I didn't see any action steps come from that conference. Now, yeah, we can easily say SALGA and the Department of local government, etc., should be able to deal with those issues. But I still believe that as a national department, we should be playing big brother over our provinces and over our municipality, because there's a huge capacity problem. And tourism is a concurrent function. Coming from a city, we did very well in our city because we budgeted accordingly, we established service level agreements with several entities to help us get our tourism and our promotion agencies up and running. But other cities and municipalities do not have that capacity because for various reasons. The priority shift, there's a lack of infrastructure, so then tourism always gets the lesser of the budget if they're lucky sometimes, if they get anything at all. We should be playing big brother. Now I know that the minister comes from a portfolio of science and technology which was a national competency. Now I know that the ministers meet from time to time with their provincial counterparts in a MINMEC arrangement. But I really believe that our minister should actually be dealing with this much more head-on, where we shouldn't be saying SALGA and the provinces have their role to play and we've got our role to play. We should actually be saying to them what is expected from them. And the toolkit conference, as I say, is a good engagement opportunity, but nothing will come from it if we don't set targets for our provinces and for our municipalities. Some cases there's duplication, and in some cases there's nothing. And that's what we need to fix from the National Department of Tourism. Because my colleague on the left made the point that in many cases she feels despondent because we're not moving forward. The department comes and presents plans, we go on oversight, we see failed projects, we see projects that are not coming off the ground. The easy way to fix that is if we deal with that disconnect between us and our provinces, because provinces and municipalities become the implementer. So that's why the president can only refer to tourism once in his speech when he refers to tourism arrivals, because there's not much happening in those provinces and in those municipalities. So I'm repeating myself, but it's a very, very important point which I do believe we need to fix. And then the last point about dealing with a limited geographic spread. Your townships and your rural areas, that's where we need to focus much more on, because your cities, as I said, because of tourism infrastructure, will get their fair share. It's about tourism, it's about product development in those areas, making sure that they're market ready, and then implementing a destination marketing strategy. We're doing it the other way around. We are marketing our provinces based on the landscape and the mountains and the rivers and all the nice things to do, the experiences. And that's SAT doing it, because that's their mandate given to them by this department. But it should be the other way around. We should actually focus more on product development, because if you've got more product development emphasis, you'll get more people into the economy, and then you'll be able to market those places. But we are doing it the other way around. We are marketing our places and not first focusing on the actual products, because by having the products and investing much more emphasis on the development, we'll get more people into the SMMEs and into the from informal to formal markets and all these things. So I'm sure we're actually all on the same page, because the department's not here to listen to us. But I think in our engagements coming from this analysis, that's the thing that we actually need to tackle head on. The disconnection between our provinces and municipalities, and doing much more on the product development side of things before we actually go out and market these places. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Yes, sir, am I right to speak?
Chairperson,
if you want.
I heard this morning an interesting comment on the radio while we drive down to Parliament. Somebody was saying the Constitution was developed not for the country, it was developed for the people. And I'm inclined to agree with that. But that left there. The SONA made me aware that we can no longer work in silos. The departments and portfolio committees should work more together. And I want to applaud you for the fact that you invited the Department of Small Business to have a discussion with us. But we should also reach out to local government specifically. You know, Chairperson, in Schedule 4 of the Constitution, there are a lot of functions that is concurrent. And I think that our national leadership just look at the concurrency, the function of concurrency. They should, in my view, have more hands-on approach with regard to tourism. I'm speaking of tourism specifically, but there are a lot of other concurrent functions in the provinces and in municipalities. And a specific thing I want to mention to you is, for example, the SKA. It's a national competency. But there is nothing
nothing happening in Carnarvon. I know a Department of Naledi Pandor, Science and Technology, has done a lot for math and science. But you know, Jefferson...
The mobile science there.
Yeah, but what else? You see, Sustainable Goal number 8-9 says, promotion of local culture and products. And I think that aspect isn't highlighted enough in all the tourism attractions that there are. That environment is very rich in history and culture. And our national department, specifically SAT, should look at these aspects in provinces and try to get provinces on board to look at that aspect. My colleague spoke of the development of products, yeah. That is the way to incorporate it. And then Chairperson, I've spoken about the SKA, you know, this thing of Operation Pakisa. We, as part of that operation, can't we have a discussion on that, as Dr. Kuzwaya did now, give us a seminar on that, and that coupled to timelines. I know late last year, there was a conference on of different departments, mapping out what must be done when. But how can we help the department to account if we don't know when must be done? Dr. Kuzwaya mentioned that we have a coastline of nearly 2,800 kilometers. And if we, especially in provinces like the Northern Cape, where we don't have much tourist attraction, if we could use that. Because you see, Chairperson, here in the Western Cape, for example, and I'm now imposing on another department, they have aquamarine activities where they, abalone, kweek, daihut. We don't have it in our province. And we'd like to see if that, I know that once there was something like that in our province. So it can happen in the Eastern Cape, for example, also. If there is one, but it can be extended. And that is where we come with a localization of the tourism. And you know, Chairperson, it is true that tourism for us only means accommodation. And I would like this committee to look at and tourism, accommodation and tourist guides. That's the two things that we highlight. And that shouldn't be that. We should look at other ways. Copy from other countries. What are they doing to enhance their tourism? And doing so, we can enhance domestic tourism also. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I'm sure what the contributions were intended was to enrich the input. I'm sure that was the intention. And honorable members will remember from day one we got here, we were saying, but there is such disjointment between the Department of Tourism, the provinces, and the municipalities. We're still saying that, it looks like we'll be saying that until the end of our term. Because you can take a horse to the river, but you never will force it to drink. We've been told about minimum wage. We're just told about minimum wage.
we haven't been educated on minimum wage. Maybe we need to be educated by the authors of the minimum wage. And we also, when I talk about that, may need to have, in fact, we need to have a meeting with the Department of Labor and the Department of Home Affairs, because we've got a lot of foreign nationals in the country. Last year, we're going to invite, is it the council or the board, of the Charter Council. I think we must invite those people so that they clarify a lot of things for us, because it's always been over and above our heads. I think it's important that we put them in our agenda. The Department of Science and Technology, maybe because I worked there for quite some time, has got incubators, has got a department that is just dealing with incubators. Maybe we may also request that unit just to come and tell us on incubators so that we can have some input when we talk to the Department of Tourism. We do have a Department of Tourism, but I think it's a bit on the dance. That's my thinking. Honorable Kumbok touched on the attractions that are in the Northwest, but not much is said about them. And there's a lot in that province that could be said about it, including the homestays, which if implemented properly, it can change the rural scenario tourism. But we may explore all those things. The problem is when the department comes, it plays some games of not wanting to give us information. But on that happy note, I think we all have some food for thought and some things that we may raise when the department comes to present. Because I think the content advisor has done quite a lot of good work, because he was able to collate all the necessary information for tourism. Actually, I was saying, really, there's 9 million. It was 13%. I'm still not sure how that figure came about. But there is also the issue of statistics. I think our statistics, I don't know. Because the statistician general, he can, he says things and goes. We call SAT, SAT comes and tells us things and they go. So really, the issue of statistics, I think we still need more clarity on statistics, because tourism is a globally contested hot political potato throughout the world. So we never get the real truth. And I think we also have got a responsibility of at least calling private sector so that we get what they have, what they do, what they can share with us. Maybe on that episode, I would like to thank all the members of the committee for having been able to come, and to thank the content advisor of the information that he's given us. What are the minutes? He wants us to adopt the minutes. The minutes of the minutes.
Yes, sir.
The minutes of the minutes. Yes,
sir. The extension of this weekend, is it
something?
What?
The
three...
I'm coming for this one as well. Can you look at the minutes, please? The minutes of the minutes. Honorable Adams is seconding. Thank you very much. Honorable members.
Okay.
We were supposed
they already doubled,
to go to Gauteng for our strategic planning workshop and to also honor the invitation of meeting Africa. But
what's the date of that one?
That was declined. When I found out as to why it was declined, because really it's a strategic planning primarily, and then we would have this because we were, after all, it's a day. I was told we're still waiting for the Deputy President to look at the legislative processes and also to look at the program of Parliament before we can do that. The Department of Agriculture, it has declined. Basic education has declined. And a number of committees were declined. I cannot give any answer more than what I was informed about. So if you ask me questions, I won't be able to manufacture that. I'm telling you what was said to me when I said, now, why was it declined? And I was told, you are not the only chair that is coming for the same thing. This is the problem. A parliament set it quite big. And that's it. So we won't be going. But we've got this other invitation. I am sure the Robben Island thing can go. Tourism research and whatever. Unfortunately, on that date, SAT is giving its quarterly report. The local government conference, we are invited. Indaba, we are invited. number 3 and 4 will be in the new financial year and the next quarter. But those are standing invitations. But I'm sure Robben Island, we can entertain that one if members want to go.
On the first one, I see the 2nd of March is a Thursday. So we've got plenary and we've got caucus. But the 3rd of March is a Friday, which is the committee day. So are you proposing that we, instead of having committee on the 3rd, on the Friday, we actually attend the celebration?
In fact, I think the 3rd of March, from what I have seen in the program, is a joint sitting.
On the Friday?
Yes. Something about the constitution.
Right.
Yeah. So. Yes, that's it.
That is also another issue, Mr. Force. We wanted also just the committee, just to draw the attention of the committee to it, because if you look at the program of Parliament, it has been amended, and when we were drafting our own as a committee, it was not there at that time. So hence we scheduled a committee meeting for that day. But subsequently, after the committee had adopted its program, Parliament changed its program also to include to indicate that on the 3rd of March there will be that celebration of the 20th anniversary of the Constitution and the NCOP. And as we understand, it's going to be a joint sitting of Parliament. Then other details will be provided by Parliament to your respective caucuses or other platforms. But as we know at this stage, it means we won't be able to have a committee meeting.
Okay. So in other words, Madam Chair, number 1 and number 2 is off the list. But number 3 and 4 we can dialogue. Okay? I must just say I'm very disappointed that we won't be able to go to meetings Africa. That's the number 1 event. We didn't do oversight earlier this year when other committees went, so we actually saved Parliament money.
We were very, very disappointed. To be honest with you, I just said, now Frederick, what's wrong? That's what I said, now Frederick, what's wrong? Why did you decline? Then he gave me what I got food.
missing stays are there.
No minutes at all.
They did adopted minutes.
Adopted already?
They did. I asked Mr. Fassman.
Okay.
I don't know who seconded it.
I didn't see anything.
Didn't hear because we are talking. It's why we are talking and ask the date. That's why I said 16.
You said it the first.
Yeah.